Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are going to go into an interview with Douglas V. Gibbs, and the focus of this interview is really on canonizing the Constitution so that we can kind of get other people's views, not just me. I may tell you what other people say, but I want to let you hear what other people say. And so I talked to Doug just recently, and this is that interview. It's about canonizing the Constitution. And so how this is going to play out, we're going to, in about 2 minutes, we're going to go into a break. And there's not going to be any break, actually. It's just going to be music going out to a break. And instead of going into an interview, or I should say a promo, it's just going straight into the interview. This way, you won't be shocked when all of a sudden, you know, you don't hear a promo, because we do a lot of promos. I shouldn't say a lot, but every so many minutes, we do two promos that gives me time to get my oxygen level up, you know, lubricate the throat and so forth. But what we want to do is we want to get through this interview so that you can kind of see the two different sides. And oh, by the way, before we go into this, I know that there's a lot of times that I don't necessarily give credit to everybody. It's just that, you know, if we did that, those of us who were riding on the shoulders of giants and we took the time to give the credit for all of those things that the giants done and given to us and that have helped us, then we would be losing a lot of time. I want you to understand Douglas Gibbs is one of those guys. He deserves a lot of credit. He's been in this fight for a long time. And as he points out that, you know, he is a hardworking, dedicated person. He's in a situation where, you know, he acknowledges and gives credit to his great wife that is helping, you know, keep, you know, the financial support. It's not that he's not contributing. He does have there's a revenue stream, but bottom line is it is recognized that he is a huge contributor and a huge lifter for the Patriot movement. So I would highly recommend that you buy his books, go to the links and go to his websites as to what we have listed on the Red State Pot. On our podcast page, Red State Talk Radio podcast page. And when we come back, it will be a good conversation with Mr. Gibbs. I promise you, you will not be disappointed. We'll be right back after this music. Let me introduce you, Doug, to the listeners. I've mentioned you a few times. This is the man that put the AM radio waves in my skin and in my veins and basically kind of reprogrammed me, or at least rewired me, to get my voice out. And working with him, we were kind of a little team down in Southern California, in KCLA or KCAL or something like that.
KCAA.
KCAA, there it is. I'm sorry. Anyway, thank you so much. And it's an honor, because I always enjoy going into the deeper debates with Mr. Gibbs regarding the Constitution, who actually teaches the Constitution. He has several books, and your websites would be
DouglasVGibbs.com and PoliticalPistachio.com.
There we go. DouglasVGibbs.com and PoliticalPistachio.com. I'm going to make sure I have that. If not, just fire me an email, because I like to post this stuff up on my podcast page, so people go, what was that person? That's where they can find it. Anyway, okay, so any news? Actually, let me also lead in with this so we can kind of cover this real quick. You are actively suing the lack of constitutionality for Kamala Harris in serving in the executive department.
Yes.
Okay. And any details on that, or just yes?
In fact, we had a meeting today regarding that. She was served on December 7th. I'm sorry. It was filed on December 7th. She was served on March 9th, and she is in default. Nobody has responded on her behalf. She has not responded to the case. However, the U.S. government, through the U.S. attorney, did, and they requested a dismissal, then gave us a long list of why, and then we used the Constitution case law, which was kind of fun, and the fact that we believe, based on our evidence, that they have no standing in the case, for we sued her as an individual who made an individual decision. So the U.S. attorney has no business being involved unless they are on her behalf, which they are not. They were on the U.S. government's behalf. So then they responded with a similar submission, except for now some of the words were in all caps. So basically they were yelling at us. And so we responded not to them but to the judge, saying we are willing to set aside the default for this to go to a hearing. We want the hearing. We want it to be between us and whoever's there on behalf of Kamala Harris. However, we also request the courts disallow the U.S. attorney to be involved in the case if they're going to be there on behalf of the U.S. government, because the U.S. government has no standing. That was about 6 weeks ago. They have yet to respond. In a meeting today with a lawyer who we are in touch with, who used to be on the Trump legal team when he was president, he says there's actually 11 cases out there regarding constitutional issues that have just kind of frozen over the last 5-6 weeks. The federal government is just refusing to do anything regarding them, and so are the courts. And so we're going to put another request in to kind of try to rattle the cage of the judge a little bit. At the same time, we are researching how we can either file an amicus brief or find another way where we can support Donald Trump's lawsuit against the social media companies. And we have a lawyer in Orange County, California, who is helping us with that. And she has been in contact with and knows personally Lynn Wood. And so we might have some connections there. So that's what's going on in the legal world of the organization. And, of course, you are familiar with the fact that I'm also wanting to talk to the Utah legislature about the 17th Amendment. No, I have not contacted that person yet. I wound up getting real sick and then was out of town. So I just – things happened where I couldn't do it. But the plan is this week to get a hold of that individual.
Okay, real sick with the Delta variant or what?
No, I wound up with a sinus and upper respiratory infection.
Wow.
And just flat on my back for like 4 or 5 days. I canceled almost all my classes that week and didn't do a podcast I normally do, and barely did the one with Scott McKay, and I sounded awful, but I did it anyway.
Huh.
So it just knocked me for a loop. What was funny about it is I got well just in time to leave for Oregon for a 1 week vacation, and we were taking our grandkids, and the two girls got it as we were leaving. And they were sick most of the trip. About the time they got over it, my son, his girlfriend, and his son, my grandson, who's 13, all came down with it and had it on the way home.
Yay.
My wife never got a single sniffle. Everybody asked, is she healthy? Does she, eat well? What is it? And I said, no, she's just so ornery. The germs know better than to mess with her. So, and if you know my wife, that's especially funny.
Well, it seems to me like she may be the carrier.
Yeah, perhaps. But anyway, I'm blessed. We're coming up on a 37-year wedding anniversary next month, and I'm able to do my constitutional endeavors full-time now because of her, and she pretty much carries most of the water when it comes to paying the bills. I pay for some of it with other things, but really it's because of her I'm able to do this full-time. So she's a blessing in my life.
Well, congratulations on 37.
And thank you.
And many, many more. Maybe with less rocks ahead.
Yeah, hopefully.
Anywho, the reason I wanted to bring you in, because we kind of had this conversation, but what I actually wanted to do was get, since you've now been able to ruminate on my first focus is canonizing the Constitution. And so you've had time to think about this, and you've given this probably some deeper thought. I don't know. Usually when I poke you, it causes sometimes that to happen. And so what do you think? Do you I think you understand, and I know my audience understands why I want to do this. So what are your thoughts on it? Let me just kind of leave it open-ended for you.
Well, you know, it's interesting, because you say canonize the Constitution. What you're saying is it says what it says, and we stick with what it says. So that's what's supposed to be happening anyway. Well, the fact that we have to resort to a canonization is a ridiculous thought, but the fact is it's a reality.
It is a reality. Let me give you this metaphor. In the, you know, what was it, the 13th century, whenever Martin Luther posted his 33 basically grievances against the Catholic Church for withholding the word and keeping the, you know, the people in the dark, and basically saying that this is just wrong. And bottom line, we're living in a time where we've basically got something in the similitude or in the likeness of the Catholic Church telling us what this thing says and what it is. And oh, by the way, the government isn't even using the organic constitution. They've got this thing called the annotated constitution, and they're making it up as they go along. And that is a huge problem. So the canonizing is both, one, getting the states to absolutely declare and assert that the only constitution that they recognize is the organic constitution, and then adding to the organic constitution those parts that clarify each clause or anything within the Constitution, the necessary and proper clause, the supremacy clause, the general defense and welfare clause, all of these different clauses that are throughout the Constitution, and all of these things that are problematic, like the exclusive legislation and why D.C. was not to be a state. All of those things would then be added as footnotes for that particular clause, so that if anybody wants to understand how it was defined as terms or definitions by the framers during the ratification debates to get the states to buy into the compact, then it removes any judiciary, or I should say jurist's, opportunity to use interpretation or their own agendas to drive in what they think they can do. And so what we want to do is get the states to basically shut that door and say, this is it, and this is how we define this, or this is how it was defined to us. Because right. Bottom line, every state, and as you probably understand, the union, or I should say this United States government, the general government, was created by the parties, not one state to the next state to the next state. All parties basically had to unify and say, okay, we're enabling you with these powers and these powers alone. And that's it. And so this is how the legal definitions are actually those ratification debates. And we've talked a bit about that. So your feelings and thoughts in that context.
Well, one of the things that when people hear this, it really helps them understand what we're talking about, is that the Constitution is a social contract. It falls under contract law, not other kinds of law. And in contract law, it's very simple. Either it's in the contract or it's not.
There you go. Yep.
And so to me, that's really the basis and the foundation from which you're launching what you're doing.
Right.
And from that point of view, I am in 100%, 1,000% agreement, and that let's do it, because we got to get people ask me all the time, yeah, but how do we fix this? We've got to go through the states. They're the parents. They're the ones that created this thing.
So there's a good chance we can start, maybe not the actual canonizing, but we can start, I think, a elevation of, one, the importance at the state level, because this coming year we will have our hands, or I should say we will have state legislators who will actually bring this to the floor in South Dakota, in Montana, in Wyoming, and these other states, to basically lay out a call for a declaration that we need to really have a definitive, and we need to definitize exactly what the Constitution is, because what the federal government is doing has nothing to do with the Constitution that they're holding.
Right.
Right. And so, and to me, like I said, I think this really just, this opens the door for, okay, now we know what the Constitution is and these are the powers they have. It just opens the door to call for literally an audit, and or to examine what's in that document and what are they doing that they shouldn't be doing. In other words, republic review.
Right.
Right. Yes.
And when I talk to people about Republic Review and they ask me what it is, it's really actually very simple. It's just basically an effort or a movement to get the states back to doing their job. The states are supposed to be the ones that are the final arbiters of the Constitution, and they're supposed to be the check against federal
overreach,
misappropriation of power, and usurpation, and so on and so forth.
Yep.
They are supposed to be, or at least not the check, but a part of the check. I mean, we're supposed to be a part of the check too. But when you have a mechanism that's supposed to be in place and a part of it's missing, it's not going to function properly.
Right, right. And Madison, in his notes on the Virginia resolution, comes right out. He spells it out very clearly. As a matter of fact, I even think Jefferson talks about this in his 1799 resolutions after the states basically slapped him in the face and said, you know, we think you guys are treasonous. We think this is, you know, a terrible thing you're doing. And Madison basically comes right out and says that the states being the parties and the sovereign parties in creating that constitution and empowering and delegating or granting the power to the general government, only they, in the last resort, have the ability to determine whether the Constitution is being violated or not. Not even the judiciary can even step into that ring because they are culpable of violating that grant, that because their grant only pertains to those things within the Constitution. Their jurisdiction is limited to the enumerated powers, not the powers that they're violating or usurping and so forth. Which is why, and I think this goes back to, I think, Federalist Paper number 10, where Madison talks that no person or no state should be a judge for themselves. That when they're doing something, they have to go to a different court or what have you.
But the federal government can't be a judge for itself either, and that's what happens when you have these things going through the federal court system.
Right.
It's
absolutely.
Like, you know, it's like I explained with judicial review. You know, if they're hearing a federal, you know, a case about a federal law and determining whether or not it's constitutional, what they're really doing is the federal government through the courts is determining for itself what its own authorities are.
That's right.
How is that limited government?
That is not. And since you actually went there, I got to go back. Folks, this is the guy that was sitting at the table when we came up with, or he goes, well, what are you going to call it? And I said, Republic Review. And then, you know, I could see the light bulb go on in the association of judicial review with Republic Review, because the court doesn't have the authority because it's not within the Constitution to allow them to do that. But clearly within contract law, the parties of the compact itself do have that legal right. So, in other words, the idea of Republic Review has been suppressed for over 200 some odd years since Madison and Jefferson tried to do this. And voila. There you go. Anyway, this is the guy.
Very good. I appreciate that. Well, you know, and we've known each other a long time, and we've learned from each other. It's nice when you're a constitutionalist and you have someone you can bounce stuff off of with, because unfortunately most people don't understand even some of the basic principles and the basic ideas of what federalism was really supposed to be. And so this is where, you know, having a friend like Mr. Mobley here is important, because we've got to be able to discuss these things with people who are kind of, for lack of a better way of saying it, in the know. Of course, I do the Constitution classes because I want more people to be in the know. it's always nice when you have a larger army to face the enemy with.
Oh, absolutely. And reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. So when we get them informed equally regarding the Constitution, then we're heading in the right direction, because this is how we can start agreeing. And so one of the things that I also kind of want to bring back around is a part of the canonizing, because it's one thing to accept the Constitution as it is, but the necessity or the importance, because there's this long, and I don't want to say it's necessarily a debate, but it's a place where we kind of, I will say, mentally spar a little bit regarding some of the amendments of the Constitution, more specifically the 14th, 13th, and so forth. And it's not that, you know, there is a possibility that some of these things, like the 16th and 17th, are hands down. I believe, what is it, Bob Bennett proved that those were unconstitutionally ratified?
There's been a number of sources. That's one of them. And even if in the case of the 17th Amendment, I think it was even unconstitutionally proposed in the first place.
Okay. So, but the point is that this is one of the reasons why Republic Review, once we canonize the Constitution, then the states actually have to go in and not only look at the federal government, but they actually have to look at the Constitution and validate whether this amendment was ratified or not. So obviously the first 12, probably a slam dunk, but the first 13th, which isn't actually there anymore, which is the emoluments and titles, right? Mm-hmm. Titles of nobility amendment. What happened to that? Was that actually ratified so that we actually have two 13th amendments, or was the 13th amendment not constitutionally ratified, and the 14th and so forth? And I truly believe that by moving forward in having the states actually do that, it will clarify. But as it stands right now, GR's position is we can move forward and actually force the federal government into full compliance with every amendment that we've got. And in so doing, we can actually start dismissing regarding the 17th Amendment, we don't need to repeal. We can rescind it. Right. That's the process of rescinding. And so, right, de-ratify. Anyway, this way we can actually get the states actually working together to clean up the government and make it to what it really needs to be, so that we can just imagine what would happen if all of a sudden we created this ground truth of what the Constitution is, what the federal government can literally do, and how to move forward. How long do you think we would thrive as a nation? Because this is something that they didn't do in 1789, right? Had the 13 original states taken their ratification debates, and every time a new state joined, they would have given them the Federalist statements of what this thing meant, then they would have had the clarity and the definitions provided to them, instead of just being dependent upon the judges at the Supreme Court and within the federal jurisdiction to kind of control them. Where would we be today had we had that paradigm?
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I honestly believe that we would probably go hundreds of years or maybe never, ever falter again in understanding the compact and so forth. So anyway, so if now we're at this point where we're in full agreement that we need to do this, and actually what would be good is I would ask that the Constitution Association, because folks, I didn't even say this, and I don't think Mr. Gibbs mentioned this. He's the president of the said association. And who's the vice president now?
Dennis Jackson.
Dennis Jackson, okay. And so, is John still involved? And George?
Yeah, but not John is, and his wife are now alternative board members only because their schedules made it very hard for them to make meetings.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
A gentleman by the name of George Rumbach, who has a law degree, but he's not a bar lawyer. He has a PhD in economics and is a accountant, is our treasurer.
Oh, okay. Okay. So, George, give my love and regards to everybody on the team having left that place.
George asks me almost every meeting if I've talked to you.
Yes.
He loves Republic Review, by the way.
The good folks down there, friends. And as a matter of fact, now that we've got, I think, you know, this opportunity, are there any reservations or anything that we need to add to this?
When it comes to the canonization,
yeah,
no.
The canonization. And do you think it's a good idea to try to get as many people to the table? And do you think it makes sense to have the Constitution Party try to take the lead on this?
If the Constitution Party is willing to adjust a little bit, yes. In the past, they've been anything but constitutional, in my opinion. So we definitely need them to get more in line with what their name says they are.
Right. Yes.
I think they've been more of a libertarian style party than a constitution party, in my opinion.
In some respects, I know that there has been more of a theocratic type of angle to the Constitution Party as well. I'm not sure if you ever looked at it in that manner, but anyway.
That was due to the influence of I can't think of his name, particular individual. He wrote a book about Romans 13. But anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so anywho. Okay, so I guess because my next step is to ask the Constitution Association, I'm going to be asking the Institute on the Constitution and all these other different organizations for them to make a formal statement that, you know, we need to unite. Every Constitution-loving organization and every patriot needs to unite behind the effort of canonizing the Constitution. And what I'll do is I'll provide you with what the canonizing means so that that way there'll be kind of a unified description of what canonizing is. But I think the best metaphor is that we're living in times of the Dark Ages, just like back in the early Catholic Church when the Bible was suppressed.
Right.
I think that right there is a very powerful metaphor. What do you think?
I think it's a perfect metaphor. One of the things that we had going on, and I apologize to my Catholic brethren out there who doesn't recognize us from the past of the Catholic Church. They were printing the Bibles in Latin, and they were interpreting it for the people rather than allowing the people to read it for themselves and come to their own conclusions based on what they were reading.
Right.
And it was a control mechanism. And they were also putting in place things that were calling it biblical that wasn't biblical, certain traditions.
Right.
And really the same thing is going on today. We have a judicial and political class that's quote-unquote interpreting the Constitution, telling you you're not capable of understanding it unless you're a lawyer, and then saying that things are constitutional that are not, just as the church did with traditions. And so it really is the exact same thing.
Right.
So how do you fix that? Well, first of all, you make sure everybody understands the document in the first place.
Right.
Second of all, they have to understand what the original meanings of that was and brush away all the problems. My first book was not 25 Myths of the United States Constitution on Accident. I recognized that this was going on.
Right. And really, what needs to happen is something that very similar to what King James did, to actually get the smartest people or the leaders in the room to say, okay, what is Scripture, and then what does that Scripture really say, and putting that thing out in English and so forth. So, anywho, I think that what I'll do is I will give you that statement. And that way you can, edit it, chop it, or what have you. But I'm going to try to get it so that it's just a nice, clean definition of what canonizing of the Constitution means, because we have to integrate how the framers actually described this, and this is what this means. And by doing that, again, it ties the judiciary's hands. And technically, we're going to become public enemy number one.
Gonna?
You ready?
Gonna be? I thought I was already there.
No. When all of a sudden, because right now, there's no threat to knocking out the annotated Constitution and their monopoly in telling us what it says. This actually takes us down a path where we're literally going to be forcing them off of the road and using, the tools that the framers gave us, period. And if not, then they're gone. So anyway, because a part of the, one of the things that comes after this, and have you ever thought more about Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, regardless of everything else?
Oh, absolutely. And it's something that we should be using. And discussion about common law grand juries. So a lot of these states and counties allow the people to put together a common law grand jury or a grand jury, a people's grand jury.
Right.
And that's how you come up with those indictments. And if you can get a U.S. Marshals and sheriffs that are willing to work with you from a constitutional standpoint,
yep,
a lot of things can happen.
Yep, that's right. Yes, and so I'd like to, I don't have that much time. I've got maybe 5-10 more minutes. I'd like to actually talk to you a little bit about what we're planning on doing, because I've really got a lot of latitude in South Dakota. Did you make it to South Dakota?
Not yet. Have a contact in South Dakota. I'm talking to him. The plan is probably tail end of this year or first part of next year to get out there.
Oh, okay. Okay, so there are a lot.
In fact, one of those contacts, by the way, is a member of the Assembly or State House of Representatives.
Oh, okay. Okay, good. So one of the things that they are dealing with that I'm getting into in the content, in the marketing of my show, is that the federal government is shutting down their ability to log, which is actually forcing law mills to shut down and actually basically to auction off these law mills, which really they're selling them at pennies of the dollar or pennies on the dollar, just due to the fact that what's the value of a sawmill if you're not ever going to be able to put trees through it again?
A similar thing's going on in Oregon, actually, too.
Right. And so what we're doing right now is, and working with the National Liberty Alliance, we've kind of laid out a framework of creating a constitutional county. And in a constitutional county, you have to have, first and foremost, you have to create your own, and this kind of seems like an oxymoron or a misnomer, but you have to create the unorganized militia. That has to be the first step. And basically integrating that, if a militia already exists, or I should say, if you want to call them a quasi-militia, because there are some counties up here that actually have militias in the state of Washington, and there are other states that actually have, you know, quasi-militias that are separate from the National Guard. But what you have to do is you have to create this unorganized militia, and then you've got to create within that, you've got to create these functions, because the militia itself is your ultimate grassroots machine of doing things and taking on government. And so one of the things, that a function would be training. Another thing would just be recruiting and letting people know what the unorganized militia is and letting them know we're not out here, you know, to hurt people. We're out here to hold government accountable. And another function would be a First Amendment petition manager or management for the county. And getting people, so that trainer would be educating people on the First Amendment petition. Same thing with the common law grand juries. Same thing with the committeemen and the political side of the government. You know, what does it take to become a committeeman? Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. Because right. A lot of these things are completely unknown. And another function would be a librarian, so that somebody would have and be able to pull together the resources necessary of the source documents and, you know, such as the Constitution, ratification debates, those types of things, as well as the local documents and that type of stuff. And then you'd also have on the other side, because that would be kind of like the operational side, then there'd be the administrative side of the actual legal operations, because when people go in to petition the county, the sheriff, or whomever, because I truly believe that the First Amendment petition is a completely underutilized tool in the Constitution. And what we want to do in South Dakota very specifically in tying this together with them is using the First Amendment petition of these people that are going to be losing their jobs and demanding that the county go after the state for failing to protect them from federal overreach, because this is unconstitutional. They have no power to shut down logging. They can't, you know, just wave a wand and say, you can't log anymore. And any land that the federal government owns that is not within the enumerated land identified or what have you in the Constitution, which is Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 17, then that's it. They can't possess that land. Even if they paid for it, just to be clear, even if they paid for it, they can't possess it or operate it because the Constitution doesn't allow them to do it.
In other words, Ammon Bundy was right.
Yes, and the fact is that the states cannot, even if the states allow it and all of that, the states, this is where the counties can start going after the states, say you have no constitutional authority to grant them that. And so anyway, so these are types of the things that we're trying to do in creating, and the ultimate goal is to get the sheriff to actually create a constitutional militia.
Right.
Because that's when we've actually crossed over and truly have taken a county from being, you know, an awakening county, a burgeoning county on the Constitution to a constitutional county. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, good. Because if you don't know where you need to be, then just calling yourself a constitutional county is like putting lipstick on a pig, as far as I'm concerned. Right?
Right.
And and unfortunately, Lander and Elko, if you've heard of what they've done in Nevada, and other counties are trying to go down that path, I don't think they understand the importance of some of these things that they have to do, from the common law grand juries, the petitioning, and all of these other things, to use the Constitution as their weapon instead of just, you know, pointing and using the name to say, hey, we're constitutional. So anyway, with all of that, I'm hoping that you're building your lesson plan and curriculum to include more of these types of things.
Yeah, I actually am. I'm in the process of rewriting the book, Basic Constitution, which is my handouts in a book form. Make it a second edition. I'm actually going to call it the Basic Constitution XXL. but I am definitely adding things like that, other things that have come up, articles. And it's funny because when I first started teaching the Constitution, the 14th Amendment, Section 3, was a minor part of the 14th Amendment. Now when I get to that amendment in my classes, it's a major part of it.
Great.
And it needs to be. People don't realize that the people of the time that were writing that particular
amendment,
section,
yes,
wanted to make sure this never happened again.
Right, right. And as a matter of fact, I know that you have the Congressional Globe, you know, every part of the debates for that amendment. But what's interesting is if you look at the original language of Section 3, Section 3 actually was framed to only punish the southern states for their recent rebellion. And the language specifically changed to make it actually wide open that no public servant ever again could get away with violating their oath of office. And the problem is, we've been untaught this and we've been asleep at the wheel, and we had no one. People, when they read that, they just didn't understand it, because it just doesn't come out and simply say, if you violate your oath of office by not supporting the Constitution at any point in any time while you're in office, you are disqualified, step down, and step aside. That's simple, right? Anyway, okay, so where can people again get a hold of you? The websites are
PoliticalPistachio.com is my blog. My main site is DouglasVGibbs.com. I have a YouTube page, two of them actually, but the main one is YouTube.com/DouglasVGibbs. And if you want to email me, ConstitutionSpeaker@Yahoo.com is my public email for folks. ConstitutionSpeaker@Yahoo.com.
Awesome. Well, I appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule.
It's funny because I was on the phone with a lawyer earlier today, a one at 10, another one at 12, and then at 4 o'clock I got something else going on.
Right.
And so you're like, hey, how about 11? I'm like, yeah. So, but I'm glad we worked it out and I was able to get in with you, because this stuff needs to be done. But that's why I'm so busy.
Right.
The reason I'm so busy is we're trying to get stuff done, and things are happening. There's a lot more activity out there than people realize, and you who are listening to this, there's a lot of activity. And if you can help, whether it be being involved, whether it be just breathing down the necks of your local critters, or monetarily, or whatever it may be, do it, because this is an all-hands-on-deck situation, to use a naval term.
Oh, absolutely. And so with that, I owe you a little definition of what canonizing the Constitution means, so that the Constitution Association can provide a declaration, and hopefully you guys can actually kind of speak to this on a regular basis, and hopefully we can actually start getting in social media, hashtag canonize the Constitution, and those types of things trending and moving, so that people get behind this. Because if you really want to shut the door to making it up as they go along type of games that the Democrats and the Communist Party are using, this is how we do it. Mm-hmm. Use the Constitution as the weapon against us, or against them, and the tool to defend us. So there we go. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate
it. Thank you. Thank you for all your efforts, because you're one of the people out there that's really doing a lot to make a difference, and it's very appreciated.
And so, folks, I appreciate that, Doug. But, folks, we've got to go into a break here. And so, Doug, thank you again, and we will have you back on. And when we come back, folks, let me turn this down real quick. When we come back, I'm going to try to move forward in helping prep for our next show of content and kind of let you know what else we want to introduce to you or other people and other things that we want to be doing when we come back after this quick promo. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255. Oh, and here's an old bumper, because actually we should be telling you to call the comment line, 425-270-5416. So, got to do a little more cleanup here. It always throws me off, and I always get a loss of words when somebody actually says nice things. And you know, they say that flattery is a very powerful tool to take people, you know, off of their game. And it's a good tool for people who are manipulative. Now, Doug's not manipulative, and I don't get complimented. As a matter of fact, you don't have to thank me for what I do. And I'm not doing this for any of that type of recognition. So when all of a sudden people start doing that and they, you know, make, you know, genuine, nice comments and acknowledgments and those types of things, like what Doug just did, it just kind of, well, shoot, what do I say? Anywho, what we need to do is we need to kind of talk to you about, you know, some of the real important things. And one of the things that I want you to understand is that the Republican Party and the Democrat Party are working together. Now, one of the things that it seems like they're always in this opposition, but there has to be a presentation of opposition. The latest and the dangerous opposition that we're beginning to hear is and this is all regarding the continued debt and the debt limit. And now Yellen just said today, or just reasserted, that they need to raise the debt limit. Now, what you need to do, again, I told you, if you go and look at the money it's costing to service the debt, and that the net break speed, neck, like breaking your neck, the net break speed that the government is running down this path of spending money so carelessly that they are trying to capitulate our system. Now, so people look at what McConnell just basically stated recently, that the Republicans are not going to support raising the debt clock, or not the debt clock, but the debt limit. And it requires a specific level of votes to do that. Now, what that means is that the Republicans are willing to take this position of potentially causing the financial crisis to get worse, or absolutely push us into the position where all of a sudden we can't service the debt, because I have no idea all the factors that are involved in the interest rates that we have to pay and the angst of those who we owe debt to, all of this fraudulent debt that we have. But I can tell you that the exigencies will come quickly when they come, and the intent behind this urgent financial meltdown is going to be to put aside the Constitution and surrender our sovereignty into this, because we're going to be in debt and we're going to be foreclosed on, and they're going to convince you that China owns us now. No, they didn't have the power to sell us to China. They have the good faith and credit of the United States with the enumerated powers, and China should have known that. And China dubiously went into, and all these other countries, England and the rest of them, all of these other countries went in with this hood, you know, this wink, wink, nod, nod type of understanding that they're going to convince everybody that they're legitimately creating this debt to undermine our government and our Constitution. That when the time comes, they will be able to wipe America off the face of the earth and blow the ashes of the Constitution aside, because they will burn and or dismantle and destroy it. So I just want you to understand, you need to start letting your state legislators know that when the financial crisis comes, it is a financial crisis of fraud, not a legitimate financial crisis. This is why, if you understand, you know, what we're talking about here, what I am asserting is something that will upset a lot of people, that they look at and they go, hey, who's this guy that's going to say we don't deserve this money that we've loaned to you on? Who's that? Because that guy's really stirring a can of whoop butt, if you understand what I'm saying. Because that will be the hurt locker put upon China. It'll be the hurt locker put upon the world, who thinks that they're going to get money out of us when we've been defrauded by dubious means and in unconstitutional, illegal ways. Fraud is fraud, and fraud cannot legitimately put you into the hurt locker. It can't legitimately hurt us. So what does that mean? That means that this whole act that we're seeing with McConnell, this whole act that we're seeing with our government, is literally just that. It is these guys deserve Oscars. They deserve these, you know, the Best Actors of the World awards, because that's how well they are doing this to fool everybody. What really bothers me is the conservative entertainers are really failing in contributing to the problem. They point to the problem, but they still point to the problem as a legitimate problem. They think that we need to get our spending down. No, we need to cut all spending, and we need to cut all debt that has been done, that has been outside the Constitution, that it is not legitimate. We cannot allow them to put us in this kind of a situation where we lose our liberties and our government. They never had that right. They never had the right to do, they never had the power, the delegated power to do any of these things, the social engineering and the welfare and so forth. We need to start following leaders. And I want you to understand that a leader actually is the person that says, we have to get back into the constraints of the Constitution. We've got to do the right thing. We've got to save our liberty. That is what a leader does. Managers are basically supporting and following agendas, and they have nothing to do with trying to restore our constitutional republic and obtain full compliance of the Constitution. They're trying to create compromises and weasel into situations and positions that will either lessen the blow or at least keep on legitimizing all of this illegitimate government. Do you understand? This is all illegitimate. Anyway, I just want you to understand that if you're listening to somebody, they seem like they're really leading. They seem like they've got some ideas out there, and they're contributing, like, you know, we got to get back into homeschooling. That is a management agenda, trying to support something that either they're vested in education. They're not vested in fixing the problem. Fixing the problem is getting the federal government out of all things it has no business doing. So these guys like Charlie Kirk that is constantly saying, well, this is what we got to do. He's vested in those things. He's not. He's managing. He is not leading because he doesn't understand the Constitution. I got an email, and I wanted to go into it, but I figured it's probably best not because, you know, I'm playing nice, and this is one of my problems. I, too, play nice, and it's wrong. We got to stop playing nice. But there's a person that's in the Constitution Party that happened to send an email. And this email was talking about, and actually, you know, I can pull it up real quick, because this person was talking about a Rand Paul position, and Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul was going down this path of resist the Great Reset, they can't arrest us all. And supposedly, this is what the title was, Republican Senator Rand Paul calls on public to rise up against tyranny with civil disobedience. Well, why would he say that? Unless he doesn't understand the Constitution, because I am telling you that we do not have a right of civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is illegal, and they are allowing the illegality of the leftists to get out there for civil disobedience. Look at what happened with January 6th. Why would Rand Paul be even trying to go back down the path of something similar, even though January 6th was not really civil disobedience? Technically, if the argument was absolutely framed and accurately framed, here was a group of Americans going to Congress to petition them for the redress of grievances. And the fact that Congress locked them out and made rules and laws to keep them from being able to petition them that day, because I point you to the First Amendment. There is no exception to that clause. We have a right as a people to shut them down. In other words, go in there, overwhelm them to where they can't even do anything. We have a right to do that. It's in the Constitution. It's constitutionally protected. They can't do what they're doing, and what they're doing is illegitimate. And nobody's ever putting this into context. The whole fact is January 6th was not an insurrection. January 6th was one of the very few petitions, but it wasn't done right. Okay, they didn't label it right. They did it. They basically accepted and think that it's okay to actually have civil disobedience and a protest and what they did. Stop doing this, folks. Start doing what the Constitution tells us what we can do. If you're doing that, then you can't be violating the law, the real law. You may be violating the color of law. The laws that they're coming up with, like you can't come on January 6th, show me Pelosi, show me Congress, show me federal government, where you have the ability to take away my right of petition on a particular day. Because it's clear in the Constitution and the Bill of Rights that the right cannot be abridged to petition government. Now, they don't even let you, they have not let us petition at all. So anyway, I really appreciated Doug being on the show. It was great to be able to have that conversation, and we hope to have some more coming up. And when we come back, we will have some brush ups and preparing you for diving into Republic Review so that you get the argument and the process clarified for you. I'm GR Mobley, Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I'm trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution.